I'm Alex Krotowski. Welcome to Tech Weekly. This week, we're channeling the ghost of technology past, looking back over the tech stories that were over the past 52 weeks. Joining me to look at the highs and the lows is a full pod deck. We've got them all today, folks. Jemima Kish, Charles Arthur, and even Bobby Johnson, so far away in sunny San Francisco. Welcome to you all. So much has happened over 365 days. Jemima, your top thing?
Oh, God. I don't know. I think the internet's quite good, isn't it?
All those tubes.
Yes. I'd have to say 366 days.
Bobby.
I was just going to be a pedant and point that out as well.
Oh, so, I hate you all. I hate you all. All right. So, I'm not a geek, but you all are. Over the next 30 or so minutes, we'll be pinning down the biggest news of 2008, nominated by us and by you. So join us on our path of retrospect. Plus, producer Scott has pieced together some of our choice bloopers. Thanks, Scott. So if you want to hear Jemima say bad words, keep your ears peeled and your mind open. Welcome to the last Tech Weekly of 2008. Undoubtedly, it was the biggest tech story of the year. Will they? Won't they? It was only a matter of time before we caught Ballmer, Yang, and ICANN in the ring in the Microsoft-Yahoo power struggle. Here's Steve Ballmer telling us the good news.
This announcement is the next major milestone in Microsoft's company-wide transformation to embrace online services overall and to invest very successfully in search and advertising. This is a proposal we believe to be a very good deal for Yahoo's shareholders and an offer we want them to think about seriously, to be excited about, and particularly to have the Yahoo employees be very, very excited about.
That was Steve Ballmer, head of Microsoft, and a whole lot of Yahoo richer. So, Charles, give us the numbers.
Okay, here's the numbers. January 30th, Microsoft made a bid. It made a bid for Yahoo, valuing it at $44.6 billion, $31 per share, part cash offer. At the time, Microsoft's shares stood at $32.60. Now they're at $19.87.
Ouch!
At the time, just before the Yahoo bid, Yahoo's shares stood at $19. Immediately, they jumped up to $28, still short, you'll notice, of the $31 that was being offered. Now they're down at $11.50, which values it at just $16.8 billion. The value that was being offered by Microsoft was a 62% premium. Carl Icahn, who's well known as a corporate raider, who basically sort of jumps into things that are happening and makes things all get stirred up, spent $1 billion buying shares.
Yeah,
and,
got it.
And he's basically seeing that $1 billion turn, yes, what a man, into $500 million or so. That's the sort of talent I have with money.
Can I have some?
Wossy.
Jemima, can you sort of give us the story as well? Because, you know, we've been following this.
They supposedly, Microsoft made another offer for Yahoo last summer, not summer 2008, but actually 2007, which never really kind of seeped out until this year. And basically, there was no love lost between them at all. These very fractious sort of meetings we kept hearing about, as you said, on and off and on and off and on and off. And Microsoft, in the end, just thought that they were being made to look like fools, and they stepped away. And there have repeatedly been stories saying, no, they are talking again, they are talking again, even up to a few weeks ago. And that's just not the case. And who knows what the future is for Yahoo, probably be split up. Maybe AOL will buy, you know, the more lucrative advertising sides of the business. And Jerry Yang, obviously co-founder, who took a lot of the flack during all this and the flack for the deal not happening as well from the shareholders, has now said he's going to step down as chief exec.
Bobby, what's happening over in San Francisco? What's the feeling on the ground from over there?
Yahoo's one of those companies that a lot of people still have an affection for. And a lot of people are still, you know, they like Jerry Yang. He's a guy who founded this company and kind of works really hard for them. But nobody can quite work out where Yahoo's gone wrong. You know, over the past few years, it's tried lots of different things and it hasn't got any of them right. I think Jemima's right. You know, we might well see Microsoft buying the search arm. They're desperate for an injection. And Steve Ballmer, despite a couple of weeks ago saying we're not interested in a deal is now saying maybe we are again. So we'll probably be talking about it again in 2009.
Oh,
saying
God.
That, imagine how, you know, this story's been going on for 17 years. But
that's not,
but,
I mean, that's not much in corporate terms, though, is it? I mean, these things can go on for years.
Yeah, and don't forget, you know, even if they agree to a deal, that doesn't mean it's going to get past the American regulators who already put pressure on Google and Yahoo working together. So, you know, where this might end, goodness only knows.
Well, clearly, I think you're right. We are going to be discussing this in 2009. But one of my highlights from this whole story is, Charles, you said it best when you said...
Oh, yeah. What would happen if Carl Icahn decides that he's actually going to buy Burger King and, you know, not mess around with us? And the headline writes itself, Icahn has cheeseburger.
Hooray!
Hi, I'm Eric. As you can tell, I'm an avid cyclist, but I'm also the lead product manager for Google products on the world's first Android phone, the T-Mobile G1. I'm here to tell you about the Google goodies that come preloaded on this phone. There's Search, Maps, YouTube, Google Mail, Contacts, Calendar, and Talk. With an Android phone, everything is made simple. Once you log in with a single sign-in, all your Google apps are available and automatically synchronized with the web. You'll never have to log in again.
Two words, media training. That was Eric, the developer from Google. That was Eric, the developer from...
I'm Eric, the developer. Hi.
From Google. Charles will be taking quaaludes later on in the program. No, of course, you wouldn't dream of it. but, of course, talking about the Google Android. But before we get into Android, because that was quite an interesting little story there, and it does have the possibility for opening things up in quite an interesting way, I wanted to talk about the most covetous... pièce d'objet. Jemima, you've got one. You've got one in your pocket, don't you?
Fess up, I've got one.
You've got the iPhone.
I know it's a walled garden and they get a lot of flack for that, but it's an incredibly efficient, really easy to use system. And credit where credit's due, they've made it very, very easy for people to get applications on their phone and even calling them applications, you know, taking this to a more mainstream audience. You really have to give them credit for that. I've got some stats. On the number of apps they've got. At the end of November, the iPhone app store had 10,000 apps. It had 200 million downloads of those. That's pretty impressive, really. And we know lots of them are quite silly. But it's great.
Silly.
It's great for the startups and external companies that are in that little ecosystem. It's brilliant for them.
Has it really, Charles, has it really exploded, this idea? I mean, are people, are bedroom coat programmers out there creating apps for the iPhone, or is it very much the walled garden that Jemima says?
There are, you know, people who are basically on their own who are creating companies that are actually generating a lot of money. And the fact is that now that Apple has allowed people to talk about it, because for a long time it wouldn't allow people to talk about it. So developers
SDK?
They couldn't share what code methods they found, what things did work, didn't work. And this really drove people at the wall. Mm. So basically a website called Fucking NDA was set up, which you know, detailed all their annoyances with this. Now Apple has opened that up. And you know, in fact, now that Apple's given people an SDK, the only real remaining bugbear that people have, I think, is that they can never be quite sure what the criteria are for being included in the App Store or rejected. And there's been a lot of annoyance among developers about that. And that's the principal source of annoyance. But one has to say that at the moment it's the only source of annoyance. And that puts it miles ahead of Google with Android and indeed the whole BlackBerry platform.
Now, Bobby, Charles is saying that the iPhone, because of all of these things and only the small niggles, is miles ahead of Android. But ultimately, those niggles are being addressed, aren't they, with the fact that Android is open source, that people are going to be able to go directly to the source, they're going to be able to mess around with it, and they're actually not going to have to go through any kind of gatekeeping process, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I think it's really intriguing to see how quickly people have reacted to the iPhone and tried to work out how they can do better than it. We're seeing all these machines that are touchscreen devices, and some of them are total clunkers like the BlackBerry Storm. But Google, I think, is kind of leading the way in saying that maybe in order to combat that kind of polished perfection that Apple manages to achieve. You know, basically, you just have to open everything up. And I think Android is the kind of platform that lots of lower ranking manufacturers are going to look to. You know, all those guys coming out of Korea and Taiwan, the likes of HTC, who have kind of come up the ranks in the past few years and are now going to start using Android because it offers a similar economy to the iPhone, but with the freedom in there. So I think, you know, that's it's not only a big one from 2008, but maybe we should look for a lot of it in 2009 as well.
Jemima, how do you think, because what we're really talking about here is not just the iPhone or Android, but we're really talking about the mobile internet. And we've seen that explode across platforms this year from, you know, the dongles that people stick into their laptops, into the netbooks, these teeny little machines that people are lugging around that are all internet compatible. What do you think the implications are going to be?
Well, it definitely opens the way for the technology to allow people to do that. But in terms of the media companies that are actually creating stuff that's giving people the incentive to go and do that, there's so much more work to do. And I think actually a side effect of the downturn will be that they deprioritise mobile and new R&D and innovative new projects, really, because, you know, that everyone's going to go back to their core thing. And that's a real shame because there's so much potential there.
Though I suspect that the big companies pulling back from that will actually open up a chance for the small startup companies, the really eager ones who can see the potential in the mobile internet, because it's absolutely true. The BlackBerry products, the Google Android, the iPhone, they really give you the idea of what the mobile internet is about.
It's true, but you still need the big content names in there.
Well, this is something that we're going to talk about. Perhaps we'll talk about this next week, actually, when we're going to be doing a forward look to 2009. And if you have any suggestions for that, please do let us know. There's a whole variety of ways you can get in touch with us. Check that out on guardian.co.uk/techweekly. But in the meantime...
This is Greg from the Games Blog. I think my highlight of 2008 was probably Little Big Planet on the PlayStation 3. Primarily because it kind of brought all the community and user-generated content that we've been kind of talking about for years finally into the mainstream. It perhaps wasn't the greatest game per se, but it brought together so many different elements and it looks absolutely gorgeous as well. So I think that was my highlight of 2008.
This is Jack Schofield, the computer editor. The highlight of 2008 for me was the arrival of a whole string of netbooks and the Intel Atom processor, bringing portable computing at a low price to a fairly wide audience.
And speaking of games, here's someone who made games headlines this year, Dr. Tanya Byron.
I've done a lot of kind of sort of face-to-face work with stakeholders. I've been to the States. I've got groups of different stakeholders from different industries together, and people are really talking and thinking in a very strategic way, and I just hope that can continue. We have to keep an eye on this because this is really important.
That was Tanya Byron speaking with Bobby back in April. So, Bobby, the Byron Review, tell us a little bit about it and what you think have been the outcomes.
It depends where you stand, how you see the Byron Review. On one side, you know, people who are kind of avid users of the internet and gamers looked at it and said, dude, this is boring. You know, there's nothing here. However, if you are a stuffy suit who doesn't do this stuff, the Byron Review really said a lot. And what it said basically was that, give or take, you know, certain issues, the internet and gaming are not bad things. You know, these are things that kids are doing all the time. And as long as we think about how they're protected and we make sure they're not playing games that are, you know, graphically violent and horrible, then, you know, actually there's a lot of educational potential here. And so I think, you know, that's really opened the door for people to start seeing the games industry in particular as a productive and useful thing for kids to be doing, as well as, you know, just a mindless bit of fun as well.
But unfortunately, at the same time, it seems, Charles, that the games industry in the UK is starting to see a bit of a siphon effect away from creating some of that great content that Bobby's talking about.
The games industry is worried about it. They've started a campaign called Games Up, where basically they're lobbying government to try to get things like salary subsidies and so on, because what they're pointing out is that the UK has fallen now behind Canada, two different separate states of the US, Scandinavian countries, France, Singapore, Korea, in terms of where people want to develop games. We've slipped from the third to the fourth in world development behind Canada. We're now the most expensive country in the world in which to develop, according to the campaign. And what they're saying is in the past 6 years, half the UK independent development studios have been closed or bought by foreign publishers. And what they're campaigning for is to get the government to give tax breaks of one sort or another, pointing out that in Canada, when they did this, it cost $500 million Canadian, but generated 1.5 billion Canadian of inward investment from companies including EA, Ubisoft and Eidos.
Well, we have actually seen the crunch in this country already, Jemima.
Yeah, NCSoft in Brighton laid off, I forget the exact figure, but it's certainly tens of people.
NCSoft also lost, they lost all of their development studios and other studios outside of Korea.
Mm.
So there is a real kind of that's happening at the minute in terms of games companies, even though, as we've been saying in the paper, are games recession-proof? We're not 100% sure about that. Now, Bobby, there's actually a theory out there, and we posited it a couple of weeks ago on this program, that, you know, while everybody's looking towards the Wii to be, you know, the thing that's going to carry the games industry through, it may not actually be the thing that will carry the games industry through, because the casuals aren't the ones who are going to be buying games.
Yeah, I mean, in a kind of time of recession, you want to kind of maximize profits from hardcore gamers. I think that's one thing that you can rely on, is that the people who spend a lot of money on games are gonna be spending more time and more money. So you look at things like Warcraft and the millions of people who are out there buying a new expansion for that. And that's kind of where crucial money comes from. Although, having said that, you know, if you look to the kind of family-friendly games, and, you know, sales of board games go up in a recession, well, if the Wii or somebody can step in there and try and get a few sales, then maybe they'll do okay as well.
You did mention, you know, the family games, and I think that there has been a real rise this year of the casual games for the hardcore gamer. How many of us know a stringy-haired boy who stands in front of his TV with his guitar playing Guitar Hero or
Rock Band? I mean, Rock Band has been has kind of taken it's the logical progression of all of those games, you know, the SingStars and the Guitar Heroes, into one package. I mean, they've sold millions of those things, and not only are they selling the game, they're also selling the peripherals as well. So, I mean, that is a boom industry. How long that goes on for, I don't know. You know, once everyone's bought their pretend rock set, do you just keep selling them different instruments? I don't know. But I mean, that's been phenomenal this year.
Right, well, we're halfway through, and it does feel unfair that we've not yet asked what you think. Next week, we're looking forward into our crystal ball and predicting the big things in 2009. So tell us what you think via Facebook, Twitter, email, or snail mail. Info is on guardian.co.uk/techweekly. Go on, get your game on. We've also had plenty of suggestions from you for highlights of your 2008. Here's a couple. RJ Stelling says, a major talking point this year was the Sun takeover of MySQL, MySQL. It runs most of the 2.0 sites, and now there are problems at the top. Charles, what do you know about this?
Well, the Sun is trying basically to make some money out of MySQL, and having paid $1 billion for it. The problem is the question of how do you monetize all those installations that are out there. How do you persuade people that they really do need to buy a Sun server to go along with that, you know, nice free MySQL thing?
And meanwhile, Ed Ross says that UK rivals to iTunes Music Store like Play.com and 7Digital, he hopes to see more of them in 2009. Jemima, do you know of any others that might be of interest?
Well, those are the big guys, really. I mean, 7Digital have been really, really quite aggressive against iTunes, particularly in pushing DRM-free MP3 formats. Obviously, Amazon as well, who just very recently launched their UK version. Although there's something a bit sort of lacking in community and a bit clunky about Amazon, and, you know, you have to have the Amazon downloading thing on your desk. I don't know, it's just all a bit messy, but that might just be me.
Well, we've also got some Web 2 people that we featured in the past, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about some of them. Songkick, Gigulate, we spoke with them this year. But is that our next highlight of 2008? Nah, it's something a little bit more controversial.
They discover all about you. They discover what you're interested in, and they serve up ads based on that information about you. And I think that that infringes your privacy.
That was Dr. Richard Clayton on Form. Personal security continued to rear its ugly head this year, with Microsoft's Internet Explorer exposing itself to, well, anyone that hussy, and scandalous advertising initiative Form sneaking peeks into our personal underwear drawers. Charles, you followed Form quite closely. So, Charles, talk us through the Form issues.
Well, Form is an AIM-listed company which got a lot of money back in 2007, and in that year, the summer really, did a big trial with BT, except it didn't tell anyone about it. The way the form works is that you visit a page, it sees what page you're visiting, looks at the content of it in the sort of the top of the page and says, okay, that's a page about this. Next page you go to, it says, yeah, but they just went to a page about cars, so even though they're looking at the page about suitcases, I'm going to show them an advert about cars. The idea, you know, is it's not that different really from the way that anyone does these things. But what really got people up in arms was the fact that they hadn't told anyone about the way they were doing it. It was discovered by someone who thought that they'd been phished when they were looking closely at their internet logs. And when it turned out that thousands of people actually had been part of a test by BT and Form of its technology, the row was just enormous. That all kicked off in the, you know, the sort of winter sort of time, and Form has really been struggling since then, I would say, to get itself onto an even footing. Its trial was delayed and delayed and delayed, and then there was a big clear out in the boardroom where a number of the top executives left.
Why did they think they could get away with doing that trial without asking people first?
I have no idea. I suspect they thought that people aren't as clever as they are. The, you know, people online don't watch things as closely as actually they do. They probably thought, you know, a bit of hubris maybe, that their technology was perfect. I think there's a certain amount of confidence, perhaps overconfidence, that, you know, the technical solution would be far too good for anyone to notice.
Well, it's ironic, isn't it, then, that we keep seeing these, in that we are smarter than the companies think we are. Unfortunately, the governments don't seem to think we are, do they, Bobby? We've got Australia cracking down. We saw some incredible censorship during the Olympics in China. And then, of course, the most recent, the IWF. Okay, we're not going to call it censorship. Perhaps, you know, making sure that we don't see...
Making sure that we don't see
dirty pictures of little girls on Wikipedia. But yeah, I mean, Bobby, so there's an interesting juxtaposition here, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, what you're seeing basically is lots of regulatory bodies and governments, for various reasons, looking at the internet now and saying something must be done. Even in, you know, quote, developed countries, you're seeing the issues of internet censorship come up. Now, you know, in the case of Britain, the only thing that really gets censored is images of child abuse. In Australia, they're trying to expand that to any illegal activity. And then, you know, yeah, look at China, look at Iran, look at Saudi Arabia, and you see people in power worried about the uses of technology, which I think is a, you know, is a...
Sorry, I mean, look also at you know, France and other European countries, which are looking at a three strikes and you're out rule on people who are reckoned to be using peer-to-peer file sharing systems, which would, you know, for some people who want to do Linux distributions or want to do... there's a school's Wikipedia, actually, which is a sort of checked-through version of Wikipedia, fact-checked Wikipedia. You know, that would screw you up. They're very, very thorough.
Very meticulous. Very, very meticulous.
So, yeah, I mean,
very,
you know,
small as well.
There's this whole meme of censorship, basically, among governments, which is... and certainly, as you say, Bobby, something must be done, which is getting a slightly scary sort of headwind behind it.
Welcome to Big Brother.
Okay, this is Keith Stewart from the Games Blog, and my highlight of 2008 was really the rise of indie gaming, where we've seen games like World of Goo, on WiiWare and Braid on Xbox Live Arcade, which are games by very small development teams, which through the wonders of digital distribution have managed to find like mainstream audiences. And I think that's the most exciting thing of 2008, because these are games which are kind of reflect indie cinema in a way, in that they're games by small creative groups, but are able to reach a really large audience. And that's the most exciting thing that happened last year.
Hello, I'm Victor Keegan, and what made me go kind of this year? There are two things, really. One was when I was in an auditorium and someone was demoing something, and I went up to it, and it turned out that he had a screen in front of him, and he's making icons on the screen move from movements in the brainwave in his brain. No wires, no Bluetooth, no anything. Why is this happening? Because he has a headphone on, which is monitoring his brain waves, and when they have certain patterns, that means you're getting angry or whatever, and it reproduces it on the screen. And they're going to integrate this into games, so you can actually move the characters just by thinking about it. Well, that's, you know, pretty amazing. And the other thing was seeing one of these so-called telepresences. That is a kind of video conferencing, only it's very high-tech, very high definition, life-size, and you look at somebody and they may be in America and they're just across the room, they are in absolute pristine condition, and even when you look at them, you know, when you catch somebody's eye in a meeting and you suddenly feel embarrassed, that happens in those. Well, in a couple of years' time, they'll be in your drawing room.
There were new online heroes that rose to the top of the heap in 2008, and the cream, and perhaps the winner of the biggest Hype of the Year award, must go to microblogging tool Twitter. Here's the main Twitterer, Biz Stone.
That's something that we want to try to start focusing on next is, if these big brands like Dell and JetBlue and Comcast and Whole Foods are all on Twitter and they're getting a lot of value out of it and they've got a lot of followers and we're sending out a lot of messages on their behalf and we're really providing them a good service that they get value out of and that consumers are getting value out of, then it makes sense for us to think about entering into a relationship with them where we can offer more value at a price. Twitter's goal has always been to create a sustainable company around this concept of this kind of unique new form of communication that we've innovated. So, you know, that's our plan, and that's what we're working towards.
That was Biz Stone chatting to us earlier this month. Jemima, you're looking at me so upset, so sad that I called it.
No, I'm not. I'm just always talking about Twitter, aren't I? Just, you know.
I'm always
talking on Twitter. It's so incredibly powerful. I mean, obviously this year we had the Chinese earthquake and also the terrorist attacks in Mumbai. And both of those, as we've seen before with big news events, are big sort of seminal events where people go, oh, right, people are, you know, using Twitter. And I've got limited time for people, you know, being really surprised that people are doing that. It's a communication. That's like saying, you know, something bad's just happened. Somebody's just phoned someone up to tell them about it. Of course they have. Of course people are using Twitter. Beyond that, anyway, much more fun, Stephen Fry and John Cleese. Actually, the real Stephen Fry and John Cleese. And I got a direct message from John Cleese. And I nearly wet myself. I was so excited. And Andy Murray. Yeah, Andy Murray.
Never
and
applies
Jamie
to anyone.
Murray. No, he doesn't. He uses it one way, as most of them do. But, you know, it's just fascinating. Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating and incredibly useful. I use it for socialising, for research, for advice, for, you know, sending people links to my stuff. I love it.
Now, see, I use this. I use Twitter for a very specific social group. And Bobby, I don't know how you use Twitter. You know, how do you see Twitter in the entire scheme of things?
Twitter's numbers aren't massive at the moment. You know, we're not talking. I mean, Facebook now is the biggest social network on the web, arguably. But and Twitter's nowhere near that. I think what it has, what it's kind of, for me anyway, it's USP is that it goes mobile. And whether that's by SMS or, you know, by one of the many clients that you can use, you can basically Twitter from anywhere and receive messages anywhere. So you're kind of constantly connected to the group of people that you're interested in. And, you know, you connect, that can expand, that can scale up very quickly. I mean, you know, I think probably all of us here have, you know, thousands of people in our networks, and it's not overwhelming, whereas if we do the same thing in Facebook or, you know, in another tool, you're very quickly inundated with stuff that's very hard to filter. Twitter makes it much quicker.
My mother doesn't use Twitter, but she does use Facebook. She sees the use for that versus the other?
Well, for me, Facebook has kind of become unusable because I've got into the sort of netiquette cul-de-sac where people think, oh, yeah, Jemima, I like her stuff. I'll send her an ad. And I don't want to say no. And so I add everyone. And it's just made Facebook completely unusable because my newsfeed is just full of stuff from people I don't know. And you know, so I've just stopped using it. Sorry.
I got to say, I'm the same. On Facebook, I just have my status up there says, I'm on Twitter.
I think the crucial thing is that lots of people still look at Twitter and go, you know, what's that all about? I think whether you use it for instant messaging in groups or whether you use it as a kind of tool of ambient intimacy to see what your friends are doing, you know, just kind of maintain a social link with people that you're distant from in some way, I think that's where it's really strong. It gives you an insight into people's lives that, okay, you know, wouldn't be worth them telling you about, but you get to kind of go along with them for the ride. And that's a really interesting, compelling, exciting thing to do.
I think it's sort of significant to point out as well that Facebook overtook MySpace as the world's biggest social network. And I'm sort of amazed that as many people still use MySpace as they do. I mean, they should just be concentrating totally on their music offering, which they are.
I thought you were going to say they should all be shot.
Well, anyway, we're going to keep our eyes peeled for the next big thing. And we will tell you what that is, possibly, next week. A year can change a lot. Hey, last year we only had eyes for Facebook. Now we're all about Twitter. Ah, how fickle are we? In the name of transparency, let's look at how we did at the end of 2007 with our predictions for 2008. First up, it was a year of HD. That's what we predicted. Charles, what do you think? Did we match our crazy goals?
We got it right. We said that what Warner's decided would decide the format, and that broadly happened. Blu-ray won out. It all actually really happened at CES, as I recall.
Much quicker than we expected, wasn't it? It was only a week or so after we predicted that it would be all over that Toshiba kind of threw in the towel.
I think that's because we made that call.
I think you're right. Yeah. Felt a little bit like the US elections, actually. Bobby, we said that Apple might launch a tablet. We were talking about smaller and portable devices.
Did we really say that? There's never any chance that Apple's going to launch a tablet. I think the what we have seen is the rise of netbooks. I mean, they've started to go in, you know, stellar, really, the sales of netbooks. And, you know, as we were saying earlier, the build up of kind of hyper enabled mobiles is really, there's this kind of space now where your mobile is getting more powerful and your computer is potentially getting a lot smaller. So there's this kind of this sweet spot in the middle. And we've really seen that come to pass this year.
And there was, of course, the MacBook Air. So they didn't launch a tablet, but we were on the right track.
Yeah.
Half a point we get.
Well, I think the iPod and the iPod Touch, they count. Yeah, the Apple Touch and an iPhone count. In effect, they're the Apple tablets. Yeah, they're as close as they get to a tablet.
I think we're doing pretty well, actually.
Yeah, we are. I know, I'm keeping score. I'll reveal it at the end.
Thank you very much. Charles, how did we do with green energy? Because The Guardian did a big spread on green energy, didn't we?
We did. We had the Cleantech 100, which was in September. The rise of green energy and the idea that companies would try to find non-oil ways of generating their electricity seemed like it was going to get a lot of momentum when the price of oil rocketed up to $140 a barrel in mid-year. But things really fell off with the price of oil because the whole credit crunch thing really started to feed through from the financial sector through into the rest of the economy in the US and in the UK. So the price of oil fell because demand falls, and that means that green energy tends to get pushed to the back because it's more expensive.
And over on the games front, we were talking about GTA 4, Little Big Planet, Gran Turismo 5, and Spore. We said that they might launch, and Bobby, they did indeed, didn't they?
Well, they did. I mean, you know, we shouldn't give ourselves too much congratulation for
pat
like
the back there for reading those press releases.
You know, for saying some really big games that are coming out in a few months. They're going to come out, but they were. I mean, they were all that. GTA 4 was huge. Little Big Planet's been a kind of, you know, it's a hit with the critics. Whether people are going crazy for it or not is another question. Spore's really interesting because after all these years of waiting, you know, sales did pretty well, but the kind of overall reaction was a bit meh. You know, people were not so sold on it. So there was it was a very good year for gaming in general, but whether those big hits turned out to be what we thought they might is a debatable question.
And when it comes to what we said was going to be the end of the bubble, Jemima, as I recall, because I've got you know, just constantly playing in my head this program, you said you thought that it wouldn't be so bad. You said there's much more experience this time around. If £2 billion advertising is underpinning this industry, I don't think there's going to be a crash.
What do I know?
Charles, you thought that we would see the end of the bubble.
I just figured that the credit crunch last year, you could see it was going to be really bad. To be honest,
he's the Vince Cable of the tech pod, isn't he?
And then finally, the last thing we said was mobile viruses because of so many connected devices. Has anybody seen any of them?
No,
tumbleweed,
I haven't.
Well, maybe they're all there, but we just haven't seen them because we're not alert to them yet.
Well, that's okay. Ignorance.
It feels like every time I get a Twitter message, that feels like a virus. How about that?
Oh, well, I think we did pretty well, Jemima. How did we do on the tally?
Well, you know, I have to give us lots of halves, but that's 1, 2, 3.5 out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Okay.
That's right. Sort of a C.
We did all right then. But we do.
Must try
at
harder.
A level, it's an A.
We have one more.
Oh, don't stop.
And it gets easier every year.
Yay.
All right, cats, I'm herding you back. We do have one more feature that we would like to highlight. Charles, what was your biggest highlight of the year?
Well, the Free Our Data campaign that Guardian Technology has been running since March of 2006 has made significant strides. The government's Show Us a Better Way competition was open to people to suggest ways they wanted to use government data and how they'd aim to free it up. And the government also said that it would have crime maps by the end of December of this year, which would be available for everyone. That all implies much more freeing up of data, much more availability of data. And Tom Watson in the Cabinet Office is the minister who's been really pushing this through. And I think that we're going to see some significant movement, even beyond what we have now, within the next 3 months.
And here's The Guardian's Simon Willison at Hack Day telling us why.
I've played around with a whole bunch of different things, MOD, defence budget breakdowns, all of that kind of thing. But I ended up getting interested in the data about parliamentary constituencies, mainly because I thought it would look really good on a map. And so I spent most of my time over Hack Day trying to find maps of electoral of parliamentary constituencies that I could use, and then sort of munging the data into a state where it could actually be presented, which took far longer than I ever thought it would.
So Charles, how come Free Our Data didn't make your list last year?
I guess I thought there were bigger, more important things to come. You know, like I said, the credit crunch really did seem to me such a big looming thing that it was hard to see that it would make a difference. And it has to be said that there's still the possibility the government will retreat from it, that it'll go for the safe option, which is just to leave things as they are because it's not very expensive as they see it, just to stick with the status quo.
Bobby, how does what's happening over here compare with what is happening from your end in the US?
I think actually, you know, we're in a fairly similar position right now. Things might change over the coming months. It'll be interesting to see, you know, where investment keeps going. I mean, there have been some interesting investments going on in Europe over the past couple of weeks, and we're not really seeing much happening in the US. So you know, maybe Britain's ahead of the curve there. But I think, you know, give it a month or two once the heebie-jeebies have gone away. And that's when we'll start to see the difference really happen.
Charles, what do you think will happen or would have to happen for everything to clamp down? Because you said that it's not necessarily going to happen. But what do you think would need to happen here for everything to clamp down?
In terms of Free Our Data?
Mm.
Well, for the... If the Treasury hawks win the argument about not putting public money into freeing up ordnance survey data and so on, or if they go for the completely insane option and privatise the Audience Survey, then the cost of data rises, which will hold back companies from doing innovative projects that they want to do. What you always find out is that, with MySQL, if you make the product free, if you make the underpinnings free, then really interesting things will happen with it. If you make the cost of the product high, then that stifles innovation. And that's a really key lesson for the government to learn.
Right, Charles, we know what you would have put on your list last year, likely, with Free Our Data. Jemima, what would you have put on yours?
Oh, well, as the mother of the viral video chart, I don't know how I would have known this, but obviously Rick Astley. And, you know, he was in the Macy's Christmas Day parade this year. And he rickrolled... Thanksgiving, whatever. He rickrolled the parade. Anyway, so Rick Rolling, Boston Big Dog, I think, is my favourite video of the year, but not the main video of the incredible multi-terrain robot thing, but the sort of spoof version where it's two guys in black tights slipping around. It's hilarious. And Puppy Cam, obviously, Shiba Inu puppies, just addictive viewing. Bugger, Big Brother.
Bobby, what would you have put on your list?
I'm in it for the lulz. I would definitely have put lolcats and the I Can Has Cheeseburger phenomenon on there. I think I met up with the guys who run it earlier this year, and it's just insanely popular, and it's got everywhere now. So I think we have them to thank for the demise of the English language.
Is there going to be another RaffleCon next year that you're going to go to?
And it's going to be roughly good.
And of course, you can find all of your favorite viral videos of the year on PDA, which is guardian.co.uk/media/PDA. Well, that's all we've got for you from 2008. You can listen to all of the archive at guardian.co.uk/techweekly. And you can tell us what you think of us on Facebook, on Twitter, and all over the place. Expect more social media tools to enter our media universe over the next 12 months. Next week, we're back ringing in the new year with our predictions for 2009. Don't forget to let us know yours. We are all ears. And just to spread the holiday cheer, here's a few moments of humiliating outtakes lovingly gathered by producer Scott. Thanks to Bobby, Charles, Jemima, and of course, Scott. I'm Alex Krotowski, and have a very happy new year. Okay, now we get to wing it. Hello and welcome to the... Look at that. We started out... That was only three words today. Anyway, please do stay tuned. Sorry, bugger, poo.
Leave that in. Yeah?
Charles, you spoke with Clay. What did he have to say?
Well, Alex, I'd have to talk to him first.
Damn.
Let's not leave that bit in. Also, they've changed the rules slightly for the certification of games. So the BBFC, who are the British censors, now have a slightly wider remit on what games get what ratings. Oh, yeah, I've got to ask a question. I forgot.
What's been going on in Guardian-oriented Web 2.0?
Can you say that?
So what's been going on in Guardian-oriented Web 2.0? What did I do?
Nothing.
Did I do it again? So what's been going on in Guardian-oriented Web 2.0?
No!
Oh, no. I didn't mean that.
I spoke to Jeff Ferry and I asked him what the growth of products like the iPlayer is putting... I spoke to Jeff Ferry and I asked him what sort of demands the growth of products like iPlayers frickin' boggle.
It's a bit of a tongue twist on that one.
So it's all about that sort of virtuous loop of TV driving to web.
Sorry, that's my belly. I'm starving too. Sorry, we'll cut that bit out.
Okay.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas, one and all. Stick that in your girth.
Girth.
Girth. Well, if you'd like to find out a little bit more, you can find out from Clay, of course, when in his book...
Yeah, let's try that one again.
That codeine is kicking in.
Whoa.
I'm drooling a little bit. Bobby, you went to the Science Museum last week to speak with the people who brought it together. What happened?
Well, Alex.
I didn't know Bobby was Welsh. Other bits of feedback. We now have 501 members in our Facebook group.
Woohoo!
Hooray! Which is great. And also, welcome to... Cox, man, somebody give me back my brain.
We have Cox coming into the studio.
I don't want
it. It's like being in Second Life, isn't it?
Hey, man, I'm American. This is in our genes.
I've come back with, you know, with a nuclear bomb and a condom, and then I thought that just sounded really wrong.
Bullwags! You did have to learn about your forebears, you being too young to remember the BBC micro-minutes.
I'm still in nappies.
We don't want to know about that.
No, now. Oh, no, that's worse. Sorry. Yes. Let's carry on. Move along swiftly.
What was that? In the ticky-ticky-ticky-ticky-ticky room, in the ticky-ticky-ticky-ticky-ticky room.
All the birds sing words and the flowers croon in the ticky-ticky-ticky-ticky-ticky room.
Oh, this is me.
It's you!
Dell confirmed a new ultra-portable mini laptop after a Gizmodo blogger spotted Michael Dell carrying a prototype around at a conference. The small, low-cost laptop is a potential rival to the One Laptop Per Child project. I think. Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer have revealed details of Windows 7, explaining that the next version of the Microsoft operating system would feature touch-sensitive controls. Ah, damn it, that's the end of the sentence. Bollocks! Bunch of Microsofters. Sorry, I was going to go along. eBay users are unhappy with changes to the auction site announced by incoming chief exec John Donahoe. Power users will get some benefits, but sellers can no longer give negative feedback to buyers. And on a survey... Oh, bugger. Sorry, that should be in a survey. I'm all over the place on this one. Sun is to buy MySQL... Oh, shit, I've got to check how you pronounce this. Hang on a minute. God, it's hot in here.
It's really, really hot in here.
Take off all your clothes.
I am getting so hot, I'm gonna take my clothes off. Damn, we're good.
I think I'm sucking your... jet lag. Yeah. That's the word I'm looking for.
Okay, that's another one for the outtakes.
No. It's getting hot in here.
Christmas is looking good already.
Charles, it's another week, another technology section. What's going in this week's paper?
Well, Alex, we thought we'd just leave it blank, actually.
You're in protest. Many thanks to our guests this week. I'm Alex Kratosky, and you can find us at Tech Weekly next Tuesday. Bye. This is why I can't do non-scripted shit. On next week's podcast, we're taking a backwards look at technology with David Edgerton's book, Cox.
That sounds interesting.
That's all for this week. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much to our guests. Oh, Cox.
Not them again.
Thank you very much for listening to our ramblings. Many thanks as well to our guests, Igor Alexander and Ray Wallace. Meg Pickard, Cox.
You should double barrel.
I don't think she'd like that very much. I'm Alex Kratosky. See you next week.
Ah!
What?
What?
See you next week.
What?
Tuesday?
Next Tuesday.
I'm rising above it, people. I'm rising above it.
That's a wrap.